Coming to you live from deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Andrew Richards.
Welcome to Defrag Tools, live. And so, we're here at TechEd North America. You got in, what, last night?
Yep, late last night.
Had a session today?
Yeah, rushed in, did a session this morning, really deep session on debugging, and rushed over here to do a live present.
Great. Well, welcome to New Orleans.
Yeah.
I think I said that right. And my liver already hurts. I'm in so much pain already. And tonight, I'm sure you'll be at the attendee party with
Definitely.
Us.
Definitely. Having fun Excellent. And meeting people.
Cool. And what was your session today? What were you
hardcore
doing?
Hardcore debugging. It was WCS 401, I think. We just did really, really, really deep hardcore debugging. Probably you could consider it level 500 type stuff. Yeah, there was assembler involved. There was we looked at crashes of applications and how you can analyze them. We looked at hangs of applications, whether it be by a CPU storm or just complete silence. And we looked at a bug check and how you can go through that. And really deep, and some of it involved assembler and
nice
typical stuff. Yeah,
cool. So if you have questions for us, you can just scroll down right below the player on the page and send your questions to us here. We'll answer them live. One of the questions that we were seeing earlier today is, how do I get one of those Channel 9 guys? Well, there's two ways, really. The first one, kind of like beads, nothing's free. It's cheap, but it's not free. You can send us a postcard at Microsoft. So send a postcard to Larry Larson or Andrew Richards, 1 Microsoft Way, Redmond, Washington, 98052 or 55.
Sure.
I don't know. It'll get to us either way. And we'll send you a 9 guy that way. I can do one better, though. If you ask us a really good question that we like, I'll send you one of these. So this is the on-air sign that we use here, signed by everyone who was on the show so far this week. And if we like your question, if you have the best question of the day, I'll send that to you.
Yeah, so awesome stuff. That's a collectible right there.
It is. I mean, and don't put it on eBay. So the first thing we want to start off with is Channel 9 Live Soccer. And this is a game we've been playing all week. We've got two countries that each have one viewer, Honduras and Costa Rica, and we're pitting you against each other. So by the end of the show, whoever has the most viewers, that country is going to win and go on in the bracket. So Costa Rica, Honduras, call the neighbors, wake the friends, tune in, and try to get your country ahead.
So who else is in already through the
levels?
I think
Panama was the winner yesterday. So,
is it Battle of Central America, or was it?
Well, we like to have the two countries that compete in the same time zone, because it's kind of unfair to pit you know, some country on the other side of the world where it's the middle of the night. You can't call the neighbors and wake the friends in the middle of the night.
Yeah, it's a bit early in the morning in Australia, I must say.
So we were just watching back here while we were getting ready. We were watching the Mark Rusinovich talk, which is really interesting. It was about Stuxnet and Flame and troubleshooting different viruses. Did you get a chance to watch that?
No, I didn't, because I was on stage. I have seen the talk before. I've seen Mark give it at previous TechEds. And other times. It's a fantastic talk. He shows how the system channels tools can be used to relatively easily pin down what a virus is doing, what its persistent mechanism is, and how it puts files to the disk, and how he calls it the buddy system, and how there'll be two exes running at the same time, and if you kill one, how the other one will recreate it, and how you can take an approach to it where you slowly euthanize them all and then kill it off and clean your system up. Of course, you mean with all virus removal, you never can be sure.
Yeah.
And there's a balance between, all right, just stabilize the system and then back up the key data and then pave it again. Or just straight pave it.
And I could see for him, I mean, he was talking about how you don't want to just kill it, because then you can't really troubleshoot it and figure out who its buddy is and stuff like that.
It's definitely, its activities itself is what gives itself away, right? Yeah. It's by its actions that you actually root cause it. If it only sat there and woke up once every 6 months to do something really bad, it would be very hard to determine that that's even there or detect that it's really there. And when you've got things like denial of service attacks and these big these botnets out there, they could be dormant on your machine doing absolutely nothing. You don't really know they're there, and then all of a sudden some bad people decide to denial of service attack the planet with 100,000 infected machines.
Yeah.
And that's when you will see it. And there's tools you can use, particularly from systems internals, like auto runs, to just get a general knowledge of what software is starting when you run Windows.
Yeah.
And there's so many extensibility points. It's kind of like the benefit and curse of Windows that there is a lot of ways. There's hundreds of ways of getting code to start running, whether that be via DLL extensions to XEs or just services and other obvious more XE start type
so places. One of the things that Mark was showing, he had a VM running that had a ton of viruses on it. I'd be a little concerned even having that VM running on my machine.
Yeah, me too.
What is the danger there? Is there anything that can jump from the VM onto the host machine?
There is a silicon level boundary at play with hypervisors, right? So, I mean, we require the physical silicon to have certain features, and those features are what the protection is,
yeah.
Right? Sure, I mean, within the VM, everything's up for grabs. I mean, mm-hmm. as soon as you get to that administrator type token, you really are at the point where anything can go. You can install drivers, rootkits become well and truly into play, so that's software that when it runs and then something else comes in and asks, is this thing running? It lies that it's missing or is
yeah.
there and what's there. So once you get a rootkit on the system, which tends to be quite low level, all bets are off. And there's a whole evolution of where there's now viruses for your firmware. And mm-hmm. so the BIOS, which is the traditional way of talking about the firmware, can have a virus way down there.
So how does that happen? How would that
Well, yeah, you can get utilities that from your motherboard vendors that flash your BIOS,
mm-hmm.
and they roughly do the same thing. They flash it with a virus included, right? And so as soon as your PC boots, even before it gets into Windows, it's already owned. Now, when it comes to
and so if you flatten your machine, that wouldn't get rid of the virus, would it?
Now, they're still rare. I mean, it's a new it's a new attack vector. Don't get me wrong, but it's a threat. Now, when it comes to Hyper-V, it becomes very interesting because we have a synthetic BIOS.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually, the Hyper-V and the hypervisor makes this fake BIOS, right? And so instead of talking to the BIOS on your physical motherboard, you talk to this one that the hypervisor does. And we call it ring minus one. There's no real concept of minus one rings as far as Intel terminology and stuff.
Yeah.
And there's ring zero, ring two. You talk to this fake layer. Yes, in theory, if you got down into that BIOS and affected it, it would stay. Well, it's not going to stay because each time we start, we're going to come back from a fresh image. But in theory, yes, you could probably break through and continue down to the real OS. But you know, it's not something you have to worry about right now. It's not something I'm personally would be concerned about. But yeah, within the VM, all bets are off. But that's the good story, right? I mean, you have VMs. They tend to be more clone-based VMs these days.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not happy with it, if there is data still on it, get it off and then blow it away and bring up another VM that's clean. It's not as if you're having to put a CD into a server anymore and go through that laborious process of, you know, physical access to the box and all that type of stuff.
Yeah. How much is what you work with and support deal with viruses compared to other problems?
For me, it's kind of different because I work in OEM support. So
yeah.
Instead of you ringing up with your production down situation, I'm having OEMs ringing up and saying, look, we're trying to ship this new PC, maybe for, you know, with 8.1 in a couple of weeks or months. And we've got this small problem. There might be a UI glitch or a temporary slowness or whatever it is, or a driver who doesn't support something properly.
Yeah.
And I work out fundamentally what's wrong. And so when the product shipped, it's shipped at the highest level. And quite frankly, the people I work with are, you know, world-class troubleshooters themselves.
Yeah.
They've already got 99% of the way normally, and it's usually just a Microsoft internal versus Microsoft external limitation that's the rest of the issue. And so for me, I'm not going to get a virus because these things are off the factory floor clean,
yeah.
right? Now, when it does come to support and you have a virus issue, I highly suggest you just contact Microsoft as soon as you have an issue. There's an entire division in the support about cybersecurity,
yeah.
right? And actually, any file you upload to Microsoft goes through these automatic analyzers. And if we find a virus in this automatic analysis, so it might be a dump file or whatever it is, we will automatically flag that support case as being that server or whatever it is being infected, and it will automatically move across to the cybersecurity team straight away to get that issue solved first.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, if you're having malbehaving servers, high odds it's the virus that did the damage. So
one of the things that Mark was talking about in his presentation was that there's different types of safe modes. Tell us about the different types and how you know which one you should start.
It's about a limiting of effect, right? So if you have any virus, you could assume that it's probably going to phone home to someone, because it's pretty pointless being on the box itself, unless it's ransomware, which we can talk about. So there's safe mode with networking, which is whether you do or don't get the NIC up, and then there's safe mode command prompt. So if you think your UI is infected to a horrific degree, then you may have to go to networking, the command prompt approach, and copy on new files or new copies of the files. Obviously, it's going to be very hard in a command line scenario to analyze things. It's a bit laborious. If you can get into safe mode, you're pretty good. Safe mode is very targeted. We only boot the absolute minimum that is required to get the system up and running. So you're not going to have SQL Server and Exchange and all those type of processes running in safe mode. It's just enough to get your motherboard running, your hard drive up, stuff like that. No things like the Windows Installer Service is not running, so you can't change MSI files and stuff. So in theory, you're reducing your attack vector down to a very small pool. Now, unfortunately, there's critical processes like WinLogon and stuff like that that do have these extensibility models that do get used, and so there is possibility that even in safe mode that you still may be active. It's a matter of recovering data and then paving, in my opinion. Get it up and running in safe mode, just have enough running so that if you plug in, say, a USB drive, you can copy the data off. Obviously, you still have to treat the USB drive as susceptible, and then just pave it and do that. I mean, with the move towards cloud, this argument is really going away.
Yeah.
Everything's centralized, everything's replicated. Obviously, Microsoft's data centers are highly, highly scrutinized, and I wouldn't be worried as a corporate citizen about its virus integrity, because it's rock solid. We have all the ISO standards for security applied to it, and we can definitely trust Microsoft as a service. Now, when it comes as infrastructure as a service in Azure, where you get to put your own VM up there and your own VHD, well, you can have viruses in there. That's your own responsibility. There's a bit of due diligence there. Obviously, we have lots of monitoring, network monitoring and everything else that will detect abnormalities. And I'm not a massive cybersecurity expert, but I'm pretty confident that Microsoft has it right.
Yeah. One of the things Mark was talking about is you don't always have to pave if you get a virus, but it's getting so simple now. I mean, if you have an SSD, you can flatten and install Windows in no time. You can always use the Windows restore, reset. So there's a lot of options there to do that.
See, I've also moved to VHD-based. So ever since Windows 7, I think it's Enterprise and Ultimate Edition, and then Windows 8, you can now boot off VHD.
Mm-hmm.
And so you end up with, in my case, I've got an SSD which has one file on it, which is a 48 gigabyte file, which is this instance that I've got here. But I also have another VHD right next to it, which is the Defrag Tools one. So I know it's a clean, empty image I use for the show, and then I have the other one that I use for my day-to-day work. It's a file on the hard drive, so it's a matter of just boot into the other one and then pick up the file and copy it somewhere else. And actually, I needed that last week. I do a backup every couple of months.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I booted into the big OS I had, and tpm.sys was missing for some reason. I don't know how it got missed, but I didn't even bother troubleshooting it. I went fine, and I just went and copied the VHD back, and I was up and running. And the great thing about Windows 8 versus previous OSs, there's so much cloud integration with your Microsoft account. I mean, the store apps are centralized, all your preferences are centralized, your desktop is centralized. Yeah. And with 8.1, we're now going to even centralize your UI layout. So that's going to make it much easier. You just walk up to a machine, and it's going to look exactly the same as every other one that you have. And when you throw in things like SkyDrive as well, I put all my documents and key pieces of information in SkyDrive. I don't even have to worry about what data there is. Sure, it might take a while to sync down 5-10 gigabytes again via SkyDrive, but it's not really that much of a hardship to just blow it away and then do a differential wherever SkyDrive was up to. It will replay back again.
So. Sure. Yeah, and I mean, I'm using my Surface Pro for my main machine now. And so I have the micro SD card, and so it's almost like a local SkyDrive.
Yeah.
I copy everything to that. So if I had to blast my machine, I'd just pop that card out, make a copy of the data that I need.
And I think the trick with the micro SD card is you can't use it for storage as far as, you know, as store apps are concerned, because it's considered to be a remote device. But if you actually mount it as a mount point on C drive, you can access it kind of okay. It's not really, it's not great, but
My desktop apps, like, you know, the different suites that I use and stuff, I install there.
Yeah.
So it keeps the SSD in here a little bit smaller.
Yeah.
So we've got a question here from AJ Smith. Says, does the cloud need defragging?
Yes. I mean, with any system, it has to be monitored, right? And, you know, Microsoft IT operations 24/7, 365 days a year is scrutinizing the service nonstop. And the actual infrastructure that's underneath everything, which is, you know, what Mark talks about at length in his talks, it's analyzed. It's performance analyzed. It's debug analyzed, like logic analyzed.
Yeah.
And it looks like, I mean, as far as, you know, is it unstable right now? No. But, you know, the monitoring is there if something does go awry, that we do something about it. I know that particularly when it comes to hard drives, they monitor them extensively, and then they pull them out of the drive bays before they die. They have monitoring on them, and that's one of the things that you don't want data corruption to sneak in. And so particularly from a data integrity point of view, they put a lot of effort into it. And then, as I said, networking, they're always looking at it for denial of services and everything else that goes with that.
All right, next question. One OEM recently introduced a dual OS device running Windows 8 and Android. Is this not a security risk, with Android being the ruling Trojan playground for mobile devices at the moment?
I mean, there is, I think, open source code that lets you read and write from NTFS.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, but it's no different to WinPE or what's the new Windows boot one? Where you can boot off a Windows to go.
Yeah.
It's no different. I mean, having another OS available means that the other OS is susceptible. You can change files on it. Particularly Windows to Go is a good example. If you know the password of the other one, you can mount that drive and change files. So it's no more of a risk than anything else. As soon as someone else has access to your physical box, that's a data boundary. I saw a talk on live, actually. I was watching it at my desktop in Redmond, and there was a cybersecurity one on Tuesday. And there was this little card, it was a PCI Express card, and they plugged it in, and within 5 seconds, all passwords were wiped on the box.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the security of a box is only as secure to physicalness. The solution for a lot of this stuff is BitLocker. So even if you had the password, you're not going to be able to open the drive, because BitLocker's got it encrypted. And so if you have a BitLocker encrypted volume, then you're good. Equal to that is, from a BIOS point of view, not even letting you boot off that drive in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what secure boot is all about. So, like the Surface particularly is locked down to the hilt, so you can't boot anything but what is on the hard drive.
Yeah.
It's much like in the old days with floppies, right? If you had a machine with a floppy drive in it, it was susceptible. USB sticks are no different these days.
So the function that you have in the Windows 8 settings, where you can reset Windows, so it's kind of like a soft paving for the most part, is that enough if you think you have some malware on your system, or do you need to take another step?
If we ignore the whole firmware level stuff, which is still pretty rare, then yes. I mean, there's two settings, and what's called push button reset, which is a lot of times just written as PBR.
Yeah.
There's push button reset mode, and push button reset in refresh mode. And I'll do the reset one first. Roughly, it's factory defaults.
Yeah.
There is a partition on your hard drive that has a WIM file, which is kind of like a VHD or an ISO file format, if you think of it like that. And we just go whack and wipe your entire hard drive. We wipe your BCD edit store, which is the boot configuration store, so all the boot settings and stuff like that. We whack the entire hard drive, and it's as if day one was back, and we call that the out-of-box experience. So when you turn it on your first time and say, what do you want to call your PC, what's your first username, you'll get back to that state. So that is reset to factory defaults, much like, you know, a button on a hardware device.
Yeah.
And then the other one is push button refresh, and what we do is we exclude the documents and settings, the user folder, from that paving. So the entirety of Windows is blattered and program files. And so from an OS point of view, you come back, but from a profile point of view, you stay. And because we take that approach, we actually rename Windows to Windows.old. So you have a bit of time to pick up device drivers that may be needed that you may have added, for example. And then at a determined time later, I think it's in the order of 30 days or more, somewhere, it's a while later, we will automatically delete the Windows.old folder and clean up the space for you.
So you've got me freaked out now about my firmware. When I flatten a machine, if I think that I've got malware, do I need to flash my
BIOS? Well, you don't
need to
worry about it. If you have a secure boot machine, which most Windows 8 machines are, we actually digitally sign the firmware.
Okay.
So it's like digitally signing a file.
Yeah.
So because it's digitally signed the firmware, you can't go and modify it.
Yeah.
Right? And that's the entire point of secure boot. So there's two sides of it. There's the cryptographic side, where you can't modify the code. And then there's also the configuration side. You can't go and screw up the configuration either.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's like data and the logic themselves.
All right, a couple more questions here. Why is it so complicated to move user profiles and other program folder to the different partition?
I don't think it's something we've ever done very well. I mean, we support it in the corporate space through group policy.
Yeah.
I don't know. We've never done a good job with that. It's just, I think it's a bit of legacy. There's a lot of app compat to go with that.
Yeah.
About hard-coded paths to C program files, that if you start moving things around, it just things break. I think it's probably more of an app compat story than anything else, but...
Yeah,
most of the time, why are you doing it is the question to ask.
Usually, if there's an issue like that, there's a lot of backstory that the typical person has no visibility into.
Yeah.
So there's probably dependencies there that you might never even have thought about.
I think the one thing that people forget is libraries, right? The whole point of that new library thing being added to, I think it was Vista, so you can make another pictures folder, you can make another movies folder.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Just make a second one, point it to the file, you know, particularly with a Surface is a good example. Mm-hmm. Yes, the SSD is small, put a 64 gig or whatever it is, micro SD in the side. The micro SD standard supports up to 2 terabytes, I believe, so it's only a matter of time of people making the cards and not the standard itself that's limiting you there.
Yeah.
Make a library that points to it, and voila, it all works. It's usually a why question. It's like, you usually don't need it. The idea of moving it is antiquated thinking. It's more about just use libraries, which is the answer.
Sure. All right, next question. What can I do to improve startup performance of Windows 8 apps like email? Need more than 5 seconds to open up my desktop machine.
All right, so there was a talk called, let me get this, something like, how many coffees does it take to boot my machine?
Yeah.
Or something like that. I think it was Tuesday.
Yeah.
There's a tool called the Windows Performance Toolkit, and I actually kind of covered it in my talk as well, Hardcore Debugging. Roughly what it does is it's like performance monitor from boot to whenever you want to finish it, right? But it's performance monitor on steroids. It's 100,000 times more data than you get in performance monitor. And you can see every single delay. And particularly on Defrag Tools, we've been going through a Windows Performance Toolkit series, mm-hmm. and we talk about disk performance, CPU performance, registry delays, file system delays, and we'll at some point go through network delays, memory pressure, blah, blah, blah. One of those things is what's the problem. It's either speed to disk, usually the case, and the other ones are, you know, speed on the network, and then CPU pegging. And then memory kind of is a facet around all of them, because memory is a cache. That's really its purpose for the majority of Windows. I mean, most systems, like I've got 8 gig of RAM in here, maybe 500-600 megabytes, or maybe a gig's been used by Windows to do program work. The other multiple gigabytes are being used as file cache. And there's a thing called the prefetcher in Windows. And once you boot your system sort of 3 or 5 times over a period, we remember every block within a file. So not necessarily the whole file, but just certain areas of the file that you touched. And we record all those. And then what we do is we have a database that says as soon as you start booting, start loading into memory, into the memory cache, all these files, even though you haven't asked for it yet. And so there's, in the boot analysis, there's the prefetch cache hit ratio. And if you're not running it like 80, 90%, you just need to tune it a bit more. Or it means that you have more to cache than it fits in RAM, and you just simply do not have enough RAM in your box. Most programs, look, if you're not seeing 5 second boot times in them, put some little bit of effort into tracing them and finding out why. You'd probably be disbound.
Yeah.
Spend the, I don't know how much SSDs are getting cheaper and cheaper, right?
Yeah.
Just spend the money, put an SSD in. This laptop I've got here is years old. It was starting to show its, you know, its age a bit. I put a $100 SSD in it and just moved I imaged the physical drive to a VHD and then booted off the VHD off the SSD. And I've gone from 20, 30 second boot times to 3 seconds.
Nice. So. Awesome. So let's talk a little bit about the show. So Defrag is a show that I started doing with Gove Maharaj back in Redmond. And what we would do is we'd troubleshoot problems that people have with their machines. And, you know, it's PCs, it's whatever Microsoft technologies, and really we'll talk about anything. So send us any of your questions. But the troubleshooting that goes into some of those issues can be kind of complicated. And we don't really have the time to go through and talk about how we solve those. Yeah. So we suggested another show.
We did a spin-off.
Show, yeah.
We did the
it's like the Jeffersons,
the
Frasier all in the family.
Frasier 2, what was the first one? The bar one, Cheers.
Okay.
The Frasier 2, Cheers. So Defrag was this Q&A thing.
Yeah.
And, we evolved into Defrag Tools, so... we launched it, I think it was like August last year,
Something like that. It's been about
and,
a year.
Yeah, it's Defrag Tools, which is what I do, and our other co-conspirator is Chad Beter, so hi, Chad. Mm-hmm. Comes out weekly on Mondays, and show comes out Wednesdays?
Yeah, we do Defrag on Wednesdays.
And so what we do is we delve in to deep, deep, deep into the tools. And as I said, we've done 44 episodes. We do, and also this live show we're doing right now will be an episode at some point. And we've covered sysinternals tools, all the big boys, your process monitors, your process explorer, stuff like that. Auto configuration, auto runs, which is all about this. Hey, these things are starting. It's a bit weird. So you can do a bit of malware analysis with that. We've gone through a whole series on the debugging tools for Windows. The debugging tools for Windows is how you look at dump files. So maybe you're looking at your blue screen of death crash, or you're looking at your application crash, or hang analysis as well. And that's what my talk was about today. And then there's another tool called the Windows Performance Toolkit that we're currently doing a big run on. I think we're about 7 episodes into that, and there's probably another 7 to go. And that's about performance analysis. And so all the things about boot performance, application performance. You know, you may have a Visual Studio web form app. Why is it rendering a page slow? And we can work out that type of thing. And one of the things about all these tools is in the series is it's much more focused on the production world. A lot of these things are non-invasive, and also most of them are X-copy tools, which means you can grab the tool, copy it onto the server, and use it without running any type of registration thing. So it's use it, collect the data, delete the tool, walk away, and there's no evidence of you being there. And so when you have these production down scenarios where you don't want to have to fight change control and stuff like that, and even maybe not even need, if you can do the analysis without elevated credentials, you don't even have to fight a security issue. You can gather the data and then bring it back in-house on more appropriate machines, which may have internet access, for example, where these tools don't. They're very isolated. They tend to need no additional data. They're very good tools for the production case.
Yeah.
And this is what we're kind of moving towards in the cloud world, right? We're moving to this, you know, you can't bring down my server to tell me what's wrong with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can very invasively analyze it. You know, 1%, 5% overhead on the box.
Yeah.
Get in, get your data, get out, and never have an interruption. Because we've kind of expired the idea of support windows. Like in corporations, you used to say, oh, between, you know, 6 a.m. Saturday and 6 p.m. Sunday, you can upgrade these servers and turn them off. And we've moved to this 24/7, 365 rolling thing. And, you know, Hyper-V clusters that file over, you know, nodes that you're using live, and so you can patch them and stuff. And we've kind of lost this outage window ability. And so, yeah, all these tools, particularly in Defrag Tools, are about that. Gove in show goes over a lot of things that affect you personally. So we have a lot more Windows client focused type things, and like this is the ability of Windows to do things, and we'll talk about, I can't think of many topics, but it's just more user-centric stuff.
Yeah.
And it's not, even though it's a Q&A show, I would personally recommend everybody go back to day one and watch every show, because Gove is one of the most brilliant minds in Microsoft, and he is giving you the best advice that you probably can get out of Microsoft each week.
Yeah.
And his little tidbits of X, Y, and Z every week are just golden nuggets.
Or X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
All right. So if you want to be a troubleshooting Jedi, you definitely want to watch Defrag Tools. If you just want help with whatever problem you have, send it to Defrag.
Yeah, you can be lazy with Show. We'll just
solve your problem for you.
Yeah, so defragshow@microsoft.com and defragtools@microsoft.com.
Correct. A couple more questions here. The Windows side-by-side folder and Windows folder is really a pain on SSD with limited space. Since most of the files are static files, why not use cloud to download on-demand these DLLs or move it to an external jump drive and ask for it as needed?
So the side-by-side folder is a answer to the DLL revision issue. So lots of applications expected to use the DLL. It came out at the same time that they compiled it, but the DLL has been patched, particularly the Visual C runtime, Visual Basic runtime, stuff like that. It's been patched since then. And you may hear unexpected behavior when a certain bug is fixed and stuff. And so what the Windows SXX folder does is have every single version that is needed. Why can't it be on the cloud particularly? Well, you need it to boot, right?
Yeah,
these programs are used by Windows. So you're not going to have network available. So that kind of
and the premise of the question assumes that you are online, which depending on your problem, you might not be.
And Windows is not designed as an online OS. So, and as far as do it on demand, it's definitely fitting the purpose. So, as far as moving to SSD, it's just one of those things that we expect the SSD to be used by the OS.
Yeah. Which,
the size that these units are shipping in is significant enough to run a vast majority of what we see as a scenario.
256 gig is common now, and it's only getting bigger. So.
And then that micro SD thing is the answer to the file size issue, or old school USB hard drive or USB stick. I mean, those things can get big and for relatively cheap. So,
yeah, I definitely.
If you
do
want
that
your whole
too.
Movie collection of every single episode of something to be on your PC, so you can watch it for end on end on a plane, just shove it on the other device.
Yeah.
And at worst, because of the limitations of RT, copy onto the SSD that one episode when you're watching it, and then delete it.
Yeah. So. Okay. Next question: what tool should be used in order to see why some Windows 7 machines are having an issue with network location awareness?
So it's probably Windows 7, in all intents and purposes, is the same as Windows 8 from a troubleshooting point of view. Actually, it's the same as Vista. From an architectural point of view, from a troubleshooting tools point of view, nothing's changed over the last 20 years as far as approach. Sure, the data's more rich and stuff, but approach is the same. So saying that, the tools that have existed for the last 5-10 years are available to you. Network location awareness is all about network packets. You can use a network monitor to trace your network packets and see how far and wide it's going into the infrastructure to do that. I'm sure there may be a network location awareness troubleshooter tool maybe that's available for support. If it's an endemic issue for a corporation, I suggest you just ring up Microsoft support. If you've got a technical account manager with Microsoft, I suggest you just ask them for help, and they'll get Microsoft support involved for a broader solution. Personally, it's going to take a bit of brain power to get that one done, but network tracing is the way to go.
Yeah.
And it's just simple things like ping and traceroute at the command line, just to narrow it down a little bit.
So you were talking about for Defrag, it's good to go back to the first episodes, but also, we love you to watch Defrag Tools, but if you're a new viewer, you probably do want to go back to the first episode, because we talk about building your lightsaber.
Yeah,
and Tools is, you can explain what that is.
Yeah, Tools is a series designed to be watched linear. Don't start at episode 44 and continue on. We started at level 100 in episode 1, and what we did is we downloaded the tools from Microsoft, right? Where do you get these free tools? How should you lay them out on a USB stick? Stuff like that. And then we move forward with basics, and we've ramped up the knowledge level. And now we're really at the level 400, and we'll continue moving up and up as years go on, because we will revisit things when tools have revved. Like, we'll get Rasinovich back in on the show every once in a while to talk about new tool updates and stuff, for example. But in general, we are expecting you to take the ride with us and become the Jedi master of troubleshooting.
And what are the next episodes we've got queued up? And what are we going to do when we run out of sysinternal tools?
I'm going to have a holiday.
It's the end of the series.
So Windows Performance Toolkit is a behemoth of a product.
Yeah.
And it, I think personally, is the best product that Microsoft actually releases for free. Its depth is astounding. We have barely touched the surface. We've done CPU analysis, weight analysis, which is hangs. We've done disk analysis and file analysis, but we haven't touched on network, we haven't touched on memory, we haven't touched on driver delays, we haven't touched on what's called the mini-filter stack, which is I/O issues, like antivirus being slow and stuff like that. We haven't touched on how we can do CLR-based analysis, network-based analysis. So there's a whole slew of episodes going forward. A lot of the show's content is driven by feedback, right? And so we've got a request recently that it's great having all these tools that we should say, you know, in your lightsaber, copy onto the server. Yeah. But what happens if I'm not allowed to do that? I'm just not. What's in the box? So we're going to go back and revisit some of the things we've said. Well, this is the really easy way of doing it. But if you're constrained in this environment, this is the tool in the box that can do it as well. And so we will revisit some of the concepts with alternate tools.
So the show will go on.
Yeah, I think at least to the end of the year where we've got a plan for episodes. So expect to see the next 10, 20 episodes at least.
And if there's different questions people have, if there's anything that you want us to focus on, certainly send those in to defragtools@microsoft.com, and we'll cover those as well.
Definitely.
Always happy to do it. So we're almost running out of time here. Anything else you want to mention?
I think the thing I stressed in my talk today was people need to start taking more of a holistic approach to issues. The world is changing. It's much more cloud-based. It's much more asynchronous. And traditional issues like a hang aren't as obvious anymore, right? Because of the way that the async model and the await keyword is used in store apps, you're not going to see the UI freeze anymore. It's just a fundamental of the new design. And because of that, a lot of the techniques that you were using for desktop apps and maybe NT services aren't the best approach anymore. And what I'm trying to stress with a lot of people right now is to move from the debugging tools for Windows, which is a point-in-time static analysis tool, mm-hmm. to Windows Performance Toolkit, which is a analysis tool over time. I joined Microsoft 5 years ago, and I didn't know about those two tools. And I spent the first couple of years going, the debugging tools for Windows is awesome, and I didn't really pay attention to Windows Performance Toolkit. And ever since I've learned the breadth of the toolkit and use it day to day, I just wish I had known that those two tools existed for the last 20 years. So,
nice. All right. Well, that is the show for today. Stay tuned. We're going to have more live content coming up. And thank you for joining us.
Definitely.
And we will see you soon.